Because I've always said, and I really believe that everybody is kind of, not a prisoner is the wrong word, but that I'll use it for lack of a better one, of their own appearance. And it comes down to, you know, some movies, I don't look like a boxer, so therefore I can't play a boxer. And so everyone's affected by their looks in the industry, you know, whether it be good looking, bad looking, you know, too short, too tall, too light, too dark. So it's just another thing like that, and I try and put it out of my mind.
Thinking of the scene with the mirror in Oxford Blues, that must have been a difficult thing to shoot.
It was a difficult thing to shoot, and what's funny is it was never supposed to really be in the movie. The studio president at that time, no, it wasn't the president, I think it was one of the people at the studio, saw the movie and wanted to put that in. So that's why, out of nowhere, ba-da, there it is. You know?
People remember.
Yeah.
Is this a picture that had to happen? That is to say, we've had a lot of pictures of kids in high school and college, and suddenly now it's after, life is starting.
Is
there time for it?
Well, I hope that there are more. And I'm certainly grateful that this script came along for me because a lot of reasons. Number one, I personally am tired of high school movies. I'm tired of being in them. I'm tired of watching them. Done that alone, this was like a godsend, the script. And the chance to play a character that had so many different levels and things to play. And the chance that people had faith in me that I could do it was another good thing. And to work with all my friends.
Yeah, exactly.
You couldn't ask for a better atmosphere to make a movie with better material.
The obvious comparison seems to be Big Chill because of the ensemble work and all of that. How do you react to that comparison?
Gosh, if our movie turns out half as well as the Big Chill, I'd be happy. I know, I love that movie. And the actors in that are pretty good.
you must have thought about the Big Chill going into
I thought obviously that it was in that genre immediately that comes to mind, and that is what, in the best of circumstances, it could turn out somewhat like that. And we strove for that air of, in the group scenes, that you would catch not necessarily all of people's conversation, but snippets, like just like you would in life, just like in Diner. I thought about Diner a lot as well. They're the two, for me, the two most successful ensemble movies. And I like that style of filmmaking. One shot, if you notice, a lot of it is in our movie, scenes are one complete shot. Mm-hmm. People walk in and people walk out. And not only is it practical, but it's really beautiful. And it's... And then especially in the CinemaScope that we shot it in, it's really effective, I think.
Everybody wants to have a bar like that in their neighborhood.
Can you imagine?
You're bound to be given the rep as the sort of asshole in the film. Actually, Billy is the...
He's the troubled youth.
Billy makes no commitments.
No. And I think we tried to avoid making him... the asshole, like a hood, like a street hood. Because that's a way that you could go with Billy. You know, you can make him like a New York street kid. And Joel and I consciously tried to make him more like an urban yuppie gone astray. I always figured that Billy was from a really wealthy family and that he had really successful brothers and sisters. And he was maybe the youngest. And so he was not... So first of all, to be in... Joel always said, in casting this movie, he said that he couldn't have anyone who wasn't intelligent in it. Because, number one, if you weren't intelligent, you couldn't get into Georgetown. If you're not intelligent, you couldn't understand the material anyway. So, therefore, Billy couldn't be like a hoodie guy.
There's a lot of smart lines in this film. Some of them are going to go right over the heads.
I don't know. I hope not. I mean, and hopefully people will come back to see it again. I know I saw it twice yesterday. I had not seen it. I'd seen parts of the movie.
The danger, I think, this or the more the risk this film takes that Big Chill and Diner don't is that they, those films are aimed at a particularly older, maybe more seasoned, yeah, intelligent audience, and this film is drawing on what may not have that going for it.
Well, I hope that, you know, I always think that there should be a way to mix the two elements, that we should, because of the people who are in it, obviously a lot of our appeal is for people our age and people who know our past work that, you know, some older people may not know. And I mean, everybody's really aware of it and I'm conscious of it. But I hope that the subject matter will bring out the older audience and keep the younger audience as well, because it's, I mean, it's really such a, as far as appeal, it's pretty broad.
Because isn't it true that Breakfast Club did not confound its audience? I was almost surprised. It did sustain
a run. I was
very
too, because
well.
I saw Breakfast Club 4 weeks before it came out because of Emilio. I went and saw it. And I said, well, you were great. The movie was wonderful, but I don't know what the audience is going to do. And obviously, it did really well. And I think we can do it at least as well as that. I hope.
It's almost a phenomenon right now, because in the middle of all of the bubblegum style of movies, we're having these kinds of pictures all at the same time. There seems to be no consistent direction, in other words. It's like,
no,
it's a parallel track.
It is true. I think that there have always been good and bad movies and intelligent and stupid movies, and I hope, you know, that it will go. I know at least for me, from now on, everything that I do is going to have to be measured against St. Elmo's Fire in terms of intelligence, in terms of story content, in terms of character. And so that makes a lot much more difficult. This is the longest I've gone since I finished St. Elmo's that I haven't done another movie or signed to do another movie, and I still don't have another movie. And that, and there have been offers, but they haven't, compared to what I have been able to do in this movie. So, in that sense, it's a great thing. And in the other sense, I'm going crazy. You know, because I'm an actor, I should act.
A lot of the anxieties that are constantly turned over in this film seem very similar to Irving's kind of anxiety.
Yes.
Where you go so far and then somebody gets a boot put to
you. I know.
Self-destructs.
Well, you know, that, it's funny because Irving's, again, talking about story and whether the audience will understand it or not, no one, relatively speaking, understood the Hotel New Hampshire. The audience just couldn't relate to it. I mean, and that's, there are a lot of reasons for that, I think. Number one, the way it was released, it never got a chance. Because on cable, it's become kind of a, people come up to me, nice, I just saw this picture you did. They have no idea even what it is, but they like it, or they don't like it, but it, at least, I get a real response one way or another, and I've always liked that rather than people saying, you know, oh, I saw this movie you did, and it was all right. You were good in it. I'd rather people come, I hated that movie. That movie was this. That movie was that. It was the other thing. They really feel emotional about Hotel New Hampshire, one way or another.
This is your third university or campus type film.
So Hotel New Hampshire. Well,
Oxford Blues.
That's right. That was college. It's right.
They're all college related.
The class was college.
What?
The class was high school. Right. Yeah.
What do you think about the way college is treated out of those three? Is it different? Or?
You know, it's funny because this is opening a huge can of worms. I was going to see how far I could get through this press thing today before I had to talk about the fact that I've never been to college. And I made it 10 minutes. Great. But it's true. I have never been to college. I was accepted at two. Could I get some more orange juice from you, please? Thank you. Accepted at UCLA here in USC, and I was offered Class, the movie at the time, and I had to choose which I wanted to do, and I chose to pursue the film career, and I just have never turned back. So,
how old are you now?
21, and so that is interesting. I think I'm the, I'm not the only one who'd never been to college here, but
you're going to school in film, aren't you?
That's right. Oh yeah, my God, in life. I mean, I've learned. Which each movie I've lived a life of some of a different person, as well as learning a skill. Like I learned to play the saxophone for St. Elmo's, and I did one right before St. Elmo's Fire that won't be out until October called Youngblood, where I play a hockey player. That's how I know about Wayne and about hockey. And I learned to skate. And we have a lot of the NHL greats in this movie. And so I've actually lived these... Gretz isn't it. The NHL wouldn't sanction NHL players in it unless they were retired or in Junior A. A lot of Junior A, like Peter Zezel plays for the Flyers now, has a big role, and he was the guy that I really hung out with and taught me a lot about playing. And And then Eric Nesterenko. I don't know if you remember Eric. Eric plays my father and was my hockey coach in Los Angeles. So I've been living these many lives, and I've been learning so much doing that. I'm really grateful, actually.
In some interviews yesterday, Jamie Lee Curtis said the same thing. Different pictures have represented different growing experiences. And it is a unique kind of opportunity that most of us don't really know. You're literally thrust into a whole new world, and you can learn some things.
No, it's true. I learned... the funny thing is you keep that little bit of that character or that life inside you forever, you know, and so you become really, in the true sense, a jack of all trades and a master of none. You know, I cannot play the saxophone fantastically. I can't even really play a song on the saxophone, but I know a good deal about it. I can carry on a conversation with people about who know. The same with hockey. You know, I look great skating, but then when you give me the actual puck, then I'm in trouble, right? Because they always shoot you from here up. So I can stick handle great, deke and move and backhand shots with no puck. I mean, so it's kind of weird in that sense.
I'm always curious about casting decisions. So I always find myself toying with ideas like, for example, you might have been the political conservative.
Yeah, well,
Joe Nelson was.
It's funny because that was the... Joel and I had been wanting to work together for a while since I met him on DC Cap, and Joel always has, if nothing else, great characters in his movies, and I mean characters in the character sense, not because that's always what I mean, not always, but that's something I've been wanting to do. I don't know if you saw DC Cab, but I originally wanted to play Dell that Gary Busey played in DC Cab, and that's how we met. And Joel sent me St. Elmo's Fire and said, the role of Alec is yours. You want it. Here's the script. Read it. If you like it, you're Alec. It's yours. You don't have to meet me. You don't have to read it. Whatever. Just show up on the set. Have your agent call. We'll cut a deal. I said, oh, well, okay. I read it. And I said, well, this is a great script, Joel. And I'm kind of looking a gift horse in the mouth. But I would love to play Billy. He said, no, you can't play Billy. You can't. You just can't play Billy. You can't do Billy. You're not right for Billy. We're thinking of someone else.
What do you think was wrong?
I don't know. I mean, Joel would be an interesting interview on this subject because eventually it was Joel who came back and said, no, you're right. You can do Billy. I had to go in and read for him for Billy. And the whole time I was reading her, he would say, okay, well, I'll read you. I'll do you a favor. I'll read you for Billy. If you will consider playing Alec one more time, if you'll sleep on it. And he gave me all these pros of playing Alec. Alec is this. Alec is that. Alec's the this. Alec's the that. I said, I want to play Billy. I could never picture myself sitting at the table while some other actor played that saxophone in that scene. I would have been jumping out of my skin. That's basically what it amounted to.
We talked to Melissa on
Sylvester. Right.
And she was saying that she would like to do a movie with you.
Yeah.
To me, after you almost fired, it probably would be
for her. It's funny, the first person cast in this movie was Allie Sheedy. And even before I was involved, as I said, I was doing another movie before this. And really, the role that Joel and everyone felt that would be nice for Melissa was already cast, and that's Leslie. And then there was some talk of Melissa playing my wife, and we thought that was just too weird eventually. And we couldn't picture America's Sweetheart with the baby, and I'm like trying to screw this girl in the Jeep out front of the house with Melissa Gilbert with a baby there. They'd hate me forever. So... That was that. That ended that.
How would you feel about doing it?
I'd love to.
Any possibilities at this point?
Not right now. But then again, it's really dry. It's a dry period out here as far as scripts. If you guys want to become script writers, please. It's like a desert.
But yet I know so many people that have been knocking on doors and
clattering away at the typewriter for years. I know that there are good scripts out there. I know that there's got to be. There's just got to be. I just haven't read them yet.
There's some sort of an entry system for new writers.
Yeah,
it's not
functioning. Sure. I'm sure it's too bad.
So what about that? Many actors are writing now. Are
that's
writing?
Why. That's exactly why. That's why Emilio writes. That's why. I've never felt that I had anything to say with my writing yet. I mean, I'm sure there'll come a day when I do, but I thought it would be a wasted exercise. I'm going to wait till I have... I'm still observing. I felt like I haven't really observed enough to put anything worthwhile down. And... But I'm developing my own stuff anyway, not necessarily writing it, but developing books. And
Lorraine Newman says you have to out of self-defense. You have to write.
That's right. It's exactly what you have to do. It's out of self-defense, exactly.
I wonder if you take a minute and assess for us your feelings about the other members of the cast, their own special talents.
Well, that's... the guy could go on forever. It sounds so corny because... you know, say, well, they're great, and they're great, and they're great. But really, everybody in this cast, first of all, they're my friends. And what's nice going into this movie is that no one had to prove anything to anyone else. Maybe to the people in the outside world, but we knew what each other could do.
So you were all friends going in?
Well, no. I didn't know Mayor Winningham, for example, but I knew almost everybody else. And... Everybody was just so it was wonderful to work with because everybody gave and some of us had a past history to build on to use in our work anyway. And I've always loved doing ensemble films. The three best times I've had movie making are The Outsiders and Hotel New Hampshire and this. And I guess they're all ensemble, so it must be that.
And yet this morning I hope we could get more into we would work.
It would seem. When I was in Georgetown, I never worked. I really did. I did like two things in Georgetown. I know. I was drunk and never got in town, but I didn't work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Sorry, I got to run. Thank you.
I'm so exhausted.
Are you pleased with how Lady Parks is?
No. It's not doing that well. It's doing okay.
It's nibbling, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, there is no movie that is really doing well this spring except for Beverly Hills Cop, which broke through. Witness did all right. Breakfast Club's done all right. Lady Hawk's done all right. It's just hard to get them in the theater, so I don't understand it. And once people go, they seem to like it. I've gotten incredible letters from people. Just incredible letters. And we love it, and we're proud of it, and it's just a matter of getting them in the theaters. I don't know if we sold it wrong. I don't know if people don't want to see it. I don't know, you know? I don't know if we brought it out at the wrong time.
Welcome to showbiz.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to figure that out, you know? We, Donna and I keep looking back and thinking, well, what was it? You know, what was it? But I don't know. It's hard to tell. I'm proud of it. And for those people that liked it and saw it, I'm thrilled.
Especially at a time when so many of the movies seem to be carbon copies of one another.
Yeah.
God, at the very least, Lady Hawk just stands out. It's so different.
I know. That's what always attracted me to it, because of how different it was. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you have lots of people to commiserate with, because it's happened to so many films. So,
I know. Yeah.
Mickey and Mon.
Yeah. Starman. I love Starman. What is that one? Yeah.
What attracted you to doing this movie?
St. Elmo's? I love the script. I worked with Joel Schumacher before. We did a television movie together that I produced and he wrote and directed in 1978. And I love working with Joel. He's a very funny, very intelligent man. So I like the script. I like the characters. And I thought that it was a subject that seemed so obvious and yet nobody had ever done it. And not only the, you know, just the subject of life after college, but life after college in the 80s. And really what it was all about to me was about friendship. Was when you work with somebody for a long, work with people for a long time, or you go to high school with people, or you go to college with people, what happens when that's over, and how do you maintain those friendships? That really attracted me. So overall, and it didn't, you know, seem, it seemed like it was going to be a lot of fun. I like working with the kids, too.
Do you think these women are 80s women?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think Allie, you know, I'm sorry?
No, your answer.
Oh. Allie's character is, you know, an architect, up and coming architect, and she has to make a decision about, you know, the men in her life. I think that that happens a lot, too. I think that, you know, women, you have, everybody has relationships in college, and then when you get out of college, they don't always hold together. I think to me, yeah, I think there are characters like that out there that are living on the fast track, and when you get into real life, you can't do that and hold together.
I have difficulty with the big scene, with Debbie Moore on in the freezing room and everybody showing up on cue, it seems, all needing each other so much, resolving so many things. There was something artificial about that scene to me. It may have been, but they never seemed to behave like this before.
Needing each other?
In a group. They seem to behave very randomly in a group, and now all of a sudden they're focused.
Well, sometimes you need to unite in the face of a common enemy, so to speak. I think they all united to help her. And we tried to show that how strong the friendships were among them by pulling them all together. You know, there's the scene with the three, with Demi and Mayor and Allie when they have lunch, I mean, and with the guys together. And hopefully we were...
Is there a reason why the women never, ever had anything to do with Billy's wife?
She really wasn't part of them. You know, these were seven kids that had gone through college together. Somewhere in that process, in the last year of college, Billy got married because he knew she was pregnant. And she wasn't really part of their group. So that's why. I don't think so, no. I think it's hard for anybody to make it in the movie industry. It's a rough business, basically. And I think that it's more open to women now than it ever has been before. I have lots of girlfriends who have either produced their first movies in the past year or, you know, their second movie. But there's been a whole lot in this past year, and it's great to see. I mean, Renee Missel just did Inside Adam Swit. Laura Ziskin just did Murphy's Romance. Sarah Pillsbury and Midge Stanford did Desperately Seeking Susan. Deborah Hill is doing Clue. I mean, it's wonderful. There's a whole number of them now. It'll always be a little rough, I suppose, you know.
Do you ever feel like a trailblazer?
Trailblazer?
Yeah.
I was a camera woman. I was the only camera woman out there. I felt like a trailblazer then, because that was really rough. I mean, I could go in the bathroom and hear men talking in the hall, and it was rough. Some wanted me, some outright didn't. Now, no. Maybe, yeah. I don't know. There are enough women out there doing it that I'm not the only one. There are a lot of women in television that do it. It makes me a little more unique. Yeah, I feel a little more unique. And it's a little tougher, too. I mean, it's a tougher balancing everything else in my life. That's a problem. When do you start seeking an alternative? I would never seek an alternative away from theatrical films. I think that they're necessary and I love making them. So.
It's just in spite of the box office records each year, I still feel so afraid that the theatrical film is going to be a dinosaur before too long.
Oh God, I hope
not.
It
scares me to death.
I hope not.
It's all video.
But hopefully there still is something to the experience of taking somebody, going with somebody into a public place with other people, the lights down, and sharing that experience. You know, hopefully that will never end. Box office? Well, Christmas wasn't good this year, and spring wasn't good this year.
But the gaps are becoming wider between the top films and the...
Yeah, Beverly Hills Cop, and then everybody else.
The distances now.
This summer is going to change. If this summer doesn't change it, then I think I'm going to get worried.
Well, let's have some predictions for this summer. What do you think?
Some predictions? Oh, there's so many good films coming out this summer. It is going to be a rough, rough summer.
So it can't do it.
What? I hope that there will be a whole lot of winners that emerge. Goonies. Goonies, Cocoon, Mad Max, Explorers, Back to the Future, Weird Science is going to be real big. I hear Fletch is great. Silverado.
Yeah, I'm looking for that one.
Oh, boy. I heard that was like one of the best scripts ever written. And I believe it. Because Larry Kasdan is such a great writer. How could it not be? You got a great script, a great director, and a great cast. How can it not work?
So what you're saying is if this summer can constitute
Goonies.
A lot of hits as opposed to just one or two.
Well, hopefully, yes.
That
summer
usually,
summer because of availability, because people are on vacation. And more available to look at movies, go to the movies. Usually summer can handle a number of hits. Whereas there is no other period in the year that can handle a number of hits. People will only go to so many films, and that's it. So, now the summer is loaded up, but hopefully, you know, people will, if Goonies and Explorers, which are the first movies to, and Perfect, which are the first movies to open, do well, people will get in the movie-going mood, hopefully, and will continue to be over the summer. It still is a fairly, fairly cheap form of entertainment.
In every ensemble cast, there are always a couple of people that seem to rise. Like, they come out, they have careers, they go forward, like, out of Diamonds, like Mickey Rourke.
2 years old. And they all have gone, as long as they make the right choices themselves, in the right career moves, choosing the right movies, it's hard for me to say, pull two of them out and say, these two are going to be the best. Really, really hard. What do you think?
I think McCarthy, and I think Shane's kid.
Emilio?
Yeah.
He's smart. Also, Emilio writes. He'll be producing, and one day he'll be directing.
Yeah, I see that.
Sure. Yeah, I think they all will emerge with big careers. I really, really do. I think they all did a great job. The mayor is a brilliant actress. She's like a Meryl Streep. I think that Demi is very versatile, and she's comedic, and she's dramatic, and I think she can do a lot. Allie has already moved on in her career. She's already done another film and is probably going to do another one right after that one. Andrew, definitely. Yes, I think Andrew's extremely talented. I think Rob is real talented. And I think
he's lovable.
He's so lovable, and he comes off of this film. I'm so happy for him because he worked really hard on this film, and he's gotten bad notices in the past, and I think that now everybody will look at him and say, yes, this man is a real good actor. And same with Emilio. Emilio, you know, they already talked about Emilio. And Judd. And Judd has another film that he just completed, and he will go on and do other films. He's got a lot to draw from. He's a real good actor. And I think from Breakfast Club to St. Elmo's, it showed his versatility. So it's hard. I can't pick one out.
Yeah, we're seeing some sustaining power here. People like Michael Perrin.
No comment.
People here, they seem to be going it. They, with the exception of
Mayor Winningham?
Yeah, Winningham. I don't know her too well. But
she did a lot in television. She had an Emmy for Amber Waves in television. She's more known in television and now will emerge into features.
But these folks are appearing in several films and continuing a public interest as opposed to those who seem to be a one shot.
Yeah, yeah. There are new,
really remarkable.
Our new breed of actors. That's what's so exciting, I think, because they really are our new breed of actors. And it's not, they're not flashes in the pan. They're not, you know, pretty
new
faces.
New breed or new generation?
Well, both. Both, kind of, you know.
Well, what sets them apart from the old years?